Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Good day and welcome to the Be a Better Investor podcast, one of South Africa's longest running investment podcasts. I am Rake Fanica. Now, we have now added a video format to the series, which is available on the MoneyWeb TV YouTube channel. And you can find the channel on YouTube and subscribe to future episodes. In this show, I speak to leading investment professionals about current market conditions, their portfolio strategies, and their outlook for investment markets. And the objective is quite simple, to extract practical insights that can help retail investors to become better investors. And my guest today is George Chevalier. He's from 91. He's a portfolio manager and metals and mining specialist. He manages the Global Gold Strategy and is a co-portfolio manager at the Natural Resources Strategy. And before joining 91, he worked for 3 years as a market analyst at BHP Billiton. So he had some skin in the game on the other side of the investment world. George, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show. The commodities market have seen one of the best bull runs over the past 2 years or so in many decades. It must have been an enjoyable ride so far for you.
Yeah, it certainly. I mean, we haven't seen markets like this really since, you know, the end of the last super cycle in 2010-11. And clearly, yeah, I keep reminding people you have to enjoy it when it happens because we're in cyclical markets. And so, yeah, it's been, you know, not only exciting markets, a lot happening, prices moving, but also then a huge number of queries, questions, etc., coming in from clients and everyone. So yeah, it's always nice to feel wanted, shall we say.
First, just tell us about yourself. What is your background and how did you get into the mining focused asset management segment of the whole industry?
Yeah, I'm a late developer, I guess. I came out of university and for want of another job, I ended up down in South Wales working for British Steel in an operations role, which was sort of purchasing, logistics, production planning. I did all three. Actually, my first proper job was buying tin at a tinplate works in Llanelli. I then moved up to Abervale. I worked in production planning, but after 4 years, I thought I'd better go and get some more qualifications. So I did an MBA at Warwick University for a year, and then I joined the Commodities Research Unit, which is a private consultancy which does what it says on the tin, as we say, and writes research on commodities. And I wrote research on steel markets for 3 years, and then I took over as head of copper research and for 5 years, after which I then joined BHP. I spent 2 years in The Hague, a year in Singapore, and then came back here to join 91 as is now. And I've been running funds for the last 19 years here. So I only came into the city in fund management halfway through my career. And yeah, but it's been great fun. I really enjoy this role. Get to see a lot of different companies, a lot of different people, and globally as well. So it's always something happening and something interesting. And the thing about commodities I've always enjoyed is you end up looking at all the downstream sectors as well. You're worried what's happening in car companies, power companies, AI, everything, because your commodities are going to end up in those sectors.
Let's talk about the gold fund. I don't know how many gold funds there are in the world. I can't think it would be too many because it's very, very focused, and it's focused on a perceived very high risk commodity. Can you just maybe give us an overview of, you know, gold-specific investment options, collective schemes or unit trusts that only focuses on gold?
Yeah, there aren't. Well, I think there's quite a few, but there aren't many larger ones, shall we say. So the first thing is we as a gold fund focus on gold equities. So we're investing in the producers of gold and precious metals. Actually, the 91 Gold Fund certainly the Luxembourg version has a track record back to 1990. As I point out, it's older than 91 itself. It was part of Guinness Flight Asset Management, 91, bought in 98. So it's over 35 years old and has a long track record. and it's always invested in mainly gold equities. And a lot of the funds, there are several of those funds, mainly Europe and the States, investing in gold equities. And that's really what we compare ourselves to. We can invest in gold itself normally via structures like ETCs, ETFs, but we tend not to, because certainly now that used to be an option. People were keen on that option years ago, but now, in a sense, investors can do that directly quite simply. And I don't feel an investor needs to pay me to invest in something they can do quite easily themselves. So we tend to focus, our benchmark is all equities, and we tend to focus on that. That's not to say we'll never invest in gold itself, but certainly whilst we're bullish, we want to get the leverage to that price, which you get through the equities. We've always said we always invest in mainly producing companies. I like to get access to the current price of the day. So there are some, you'll see gold funds who invest mainly in exploration development, which is, you know, the really leveraged end. You can get 10 baggers, you know, you get some real excitement there. But it's a different type of investing, because you're really putting lots of small bets down and hoping some of them work. We're trying to really decide which of the larger producing companies are going to outperform.
Your fund fact sheet shows that over the past year, the fund returned 176%, which is exceptional. You actually beat the index as well as the benchmark. But how does that compare to the performance of the gold price over that period?
Yeah, I think it was about three times the gold price, roughly. I can't quite remember. But last year, I mean, you know, we don't expect to do that every year. Certainly in the 35 years, that's a record year. You know, we've had exceptional circumstances over the last year, obviously a major move in gold prices. And then the equities, we got that leverage. It actually almost came up. We've had a very tough period for gold equities in the sense they've underperformed the gold price for the five previous years, which is very unusual. And it clearly led to a lot of people questioning why we would invest in equities. And arguably, it had to happen at some point. They'd underperformed quite a bit. They've changed the way they run their companies. But clearly, you know, we had this confluence of events, gold prices going up a lot. And, you know, the maths is quite simple on the leverage. If the gold price goes up, let's say it doubles 100%, that's great. But if you're an equity and your costs of producing gold, let's say they're $1,000 an ounce for equities, gold's $2,000, your margin's $1,000. Gold goes up 100% from $2,000 to $4,000, that's 100% up. Your margins are going to go basically from $1,000 to $3,000. They're going to triple. And that's what we call operating leverage that you get in the equities, because you have that cost base. Now, the cost will rise, so it won't be exactly that. But that leverage is what we saw last year. So you saw companies, and if you look back 2 years now, on average, the top sort of 30 companies, if I look at spot prices today and costs, which have risen clearly, margins, though, are somewhere around four to five times on average what they were in 23. So, you know, we've seen a massive explosion in margins. And that's really what's been driving these equities. And what's interesting is, my view is, if you assume prices stay where they are around $5,000 an ounce, and that's a big assumption, certainly this year, you know, there is still valuation upside in the equities because their margins remain very high.
How many underlying investments are there in the fund? How many gold companies have you invested in?
So we've kept it fairly tight. We're around 30 companies in the portfolio. Our benchmark, where we use NYSE Arca gold miners, that's around 60 or so companies in the benchmark. Frankly, you know, we want mainly producing companies. We need companies certainly over a certain size so we can get liquidity, because we're daily traded. We would, you know, there's frankly around 100 companies we can look at. The universe is a lot bigger. There's lots of small cap companies around, but, you know, several hundred. But actually, companies we'd want to look at and invest in, it's quite small. It's probably around 100. And you know, our benchmark is pretty concentrated.
It's an interesting sector because on the revenue side, you know, there's not a lot of a gold miner can do. You have a fixed price at which you sell your product. So the only thing you really can control there's costs. And, you know, in a booming market, you know, maybe they can take their eye off the ball of the cost management. So is that the primary thing you look at when you evaluate an investment opportunity in a gold counter?
You're clearly, cost management is key. It's also capital allocation. So on any resource company, you know, these are capital intensive industries. You spend a lot of money building a mine and then you hope to make that money back. And how they manage that CapEx and what projects they've got coming forward, what growth they have is clearly as important. So, you know, my ideal company will probably have two or three mines, because obviously if you only have one, there's a risk of a disruption and it's, you know, could be bad for the company. If you've got two or three, you're slightly diversified. Two or three mines generating cash, that's great, but also probably at least one or two projects which are quite close to a decision they can build and grow from, and then also some promising exploration ground. So, you know, I almost want a company that's got, you know, production now, something quite soon, and then a longer term future. You know, obviously some people just like invest in exploration companies. The trouble with those is they can, obviously, if they find something good, you know, do multiples of value, but they also run out of money quite regularly and therefore, you know, can come and issue shares and ask for more money. What I like about those companies who have production is they can fund that growth and fund that exploration, at least to some extent. So that's my ideal company. Obviously, then you've got to look at the valuation. Quite often the market, you know, recognizes that and pays up for them. But you're looking for those where you see, you know, valuation opportunity, maybe because you're more hopeful around their exploration or their new project, or you trust management more than the market to deliver on those things. And those are the sort of judgments we're making on an almost daily basis.
It must be interesting now on what your strategy is, because the market has run significantly, as you've said earlier, you know, a multi-decade performance, a positive performance. So many people who have not had exposure to gold would say, you know, listen, you know, there's a lot of money that has been made. I don't want to get in because maybe it is at a high. So from a fund management perspective, what is your strategy now? And has it changed to what it was, say, 2 years ago?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a good question, and I would be very rich if I'd got a few pounds for every time anybody had said, "I think I've missed it; it's too high in the last 5 years." So, and then people ask me, "Oh, you know, have I missed it? What should I do?" And I say, my first answer is, remember, I'm a gold fund manager, so you know what my conclusion will be. Whatever my arguments, they're going to be, of course, it's a good time. No, I'm joking, but the fact is, yeah, we deliberately 2-3 years ago now, we started to look for a bit more leverage. That's companies with a bit more growth, a bit more operating leverage, because we were positive on gold prices, very positive over the last 3 years. And that didn't work initially, but worked very well the second half of last year, which is why we had that great performance, because we had that sort of, so if you look at it, we'd moved sort of, And as you always get that leverage, a bit less large cap, more mid cap sort of companies. We weren't in real juniors, and some people in the juniors did even better. I mean, they got real leverage, but we don't want to take, you know, all that risk. So we definitely look to take some leverage. The question we're all facing today is, well, you know, should I be taking risk down now, going back to more solid companies in case prices don't move? Actually, this year I think it's, and I hope I'm right, we'll find out, but for an active manager like ourselves, you know, who study the sector and specialists, I think it's a really interesting year we have ahead. Now, I think gold prices aren't going to fall massively. I think they're going to trade, I mean, my base case is we average over 4,500 this year, which is a big assumption, but I think the fundamentals are there. There's a, and by the way, I think the bigger risk is it goes higher, not lower. But based on that, I'm looking for companies who can generate growth, keep their costs under control, and sort of at least maintain, if not grow, those margins, which are really good at the moment, because that will back up their value. That's quite a lot of detailed work, working out which of those companies. But I think if you can get that right this year, you can outperform the index, and the index should be positive if prices stay here. So it's for an active manager, I think it's a year really to show your stripes and get that analysis right. I mean, last year, in a way, you just had to find a bit of leverage and you were going to outperform. This year, I think you've got to work a bit harder to find the right companies with the right strategies, etc.
Yeah, so it is a stock picker's market, even if it is in a concentrated sector like the gold sector. So, you know, name a few of the companies you are looking at and which you believe could fit into that category.
Well, there's a whole range of companies. We have to be careful who we talk about, really. But I mean, I can go right through the range. We actually are overweight Barrick today. And that's an interesting one. I'd almost call that a special situation. There's obviously been, you know, Mark Bristow was basically forced out in or asked to leave in October, November last year. You've had a big management change. There is definitely, they're talking about IPOing their North American business this year. That definitely looks like they're trying to show the sum of the parts. There is a question mark whether Barrick exists in a year or two. They could break up the company. We think there's a lot of value in their assets and they're going to realize that. How they realize it is not clear yet. They certainly haven't laid that out. They've talked about IPOing the North American business, but we think they can generate good value out of there and they do have good growth prospects. So on the large cap side, we didn't own any Barrick a year ago. We now own, you know, it's one of our larger positions. They've also had a slight, the positive news is they lost their mine in Mali. The Mali government took it off them. It was 10% of their value. They essentially cut a deal and got the mine back in November and are now ramping that back up, which is good news for them and Mali. And that's sort of been a positive as well on that side. So we think there's a lot of opportunities there. I would say it's quite complicated. We will see if it works. But behind it all are some pretty good assets and pretty good prospects in that company. If I come down through the mid caps, you know, we've got a number, I think quite an interesting one this year is Pan American Silver. It does produce silver, it produces a lot of gold as well. They have a number of opportunities throughout the piece. One is to, I think, rationalize their portfolio. They have a number of assets, having bought Yamana and all parts of that, which they need to rationalize. They also have this silver mine in Guatemala, that's they bought Tahoe Silver. The mine had already been shut due to some pretty awful actions by the previous owners. They have, for the last nearly 4 years now, been trying to get permission to restart that mine. With silver prices doing what they're doing, I think there's more momentum behind that. It's they need agreements with the locals. They're still discussing. It does take time. It was, you know, a bad situation. But if they can restart that mine, that's one of the best silver mines in the world, and it's ready to go. They just need permission to restart. So that's a catalyst. I don't know whether it happens, but it's interesting. But they also have a number of other projects, one in Mexico, where, you know, things are progressing quite well. They found more silver. That's La Colorado, deep down. Certainly waiting to hear new studies on that, which I think also could be positive. So these sort of positions, same with Barrick, Pan American, what I like is you've got a company which is producing, that they're making good margins, but there's a number of catalysts. So I can identify two or three catalysts. I don't know whether they will happen, but if one or two happen, we should see outperformance.
South African gold companies, do you have a favorite there?
Yeah, so we own Goldfields and, well, Anglo Gold. I don't know if you call that South African anymore. They moved to America, but traditionally we call it that. It's certainly listed there still. Actually, and we own Harmony as well. So we own all the three big ones. We've owned them for a year. They've done incredibly well. They were super value a year ago. They're not quite so good now. Probably at the margin, it's to be honest, we discuss it. We think they're pretty close and there's disagreement amongst our analysts about which is best. I probably at the margin prefer Goldfields, but it's a close run thing. I like the growth they've had, obviously, in Salares Norte, which is working very well in Chile. They've got great growth there. And they, whether it's lucky or skill, their claim skill, they made two good purchases before the price ran. So they obviously bought out the second half of the Windfall project and they bought Gold Road in Australia. So those were done with cash, which meant they actually look fantastic now, the returns on those. But they've got a good growth profile over the next 5 years. They've got enough to work on. They don't need to go and buy anything else. I mean, they still could, but they don't need to. and they've got very good cash flow and cash flow generation. So they just look to me a company that's really in a very good situation with a number of opportunities. And I do like the current management team. I think they've done a very good job.
If the gold price remains steady, I don't know, you know, how you define steady, but say within the range of between $4,500 and $5,000, you will still see significant profits from these companies. And, you know, that I think will keep these counters, the valuations quite high. Again, does that suggest a sustainability going forward, a medium to long-term sustainability of the industry if the gold price can remain steady?
Yeah, I mean, if we just look at a bit of a history. So I can't tell you the number of people, you know, over the last 10 years who've said to me, I never invest in gold companies. Their return on capital employed is dreadful. They're awful companies. They always spend too much. They never return, make decent returns. And basically, if you take a sort of index of gold companies over 20 years, you can show that quite easily. Returns on capital employed have not been great on average. Just bear with me. The fact is, though, if you go in the detail, and that's what we do, you know, I say, just look at Agnico Eagle since 1990. You could have done with Randgold, though they merged with Barrick, and compare that to a Newmont or Barrick, etc., over the same period. And there's a massive difference. And the difference, really, lots of reasons, it comes down to one major thing. Barrick, Newman, and a lot of the majors got caught in this hedging, selling forward gold in the late 90s, early 2000s. Gold price going nowhere, in fact, going down. It was trading in contango. If you sold forward 2 years, you made 5, 10% above the spot price. And then, obviously, prices didn't move, so you were earning better than the spot price. And that worked brilliantly. Everybody said, this is great. I can make more money. Then gold shot up. And of course, when gold prices go up, your costs go up. So by the mid 2005, 6, 7, suddenly these companies had sold forward gold and their costs were above the price they sold forward at. And what they had to do was issue massive amounts of equity to buy back their hedge books. And if you go back to 2005, I think I worked out the amount of gold sold forward was equivalent to over a year's production. It was obviously spread over the forward 3 or 4 years, but there was massive forward selling. It was quite normal. And to get out of that position, they had to issue a massive equity, and that destroyed your returns on equity. So if you go back over that period, returns on equity look terrible. If you look at just Agnico Eagle, who never hedged, never did this, Randgold were the same, their returns were fine and absolutely fantastic. So I go, everybody said, don't invest in gold companies because the industry is terrible. That was a major contributor and a major mistake. People have learned. If you look today, the amount of gold sold forward is probably 10% of a year's production, and most of that for valid reasons. So these are very different companies. You also then go shorter term. They all got carried away, like the whole mining industry in the super cycle, by 10, 11, massive growth projects, massive capex, prices rolled over. They were all then negative free cash flow. You can't stop a project. You've got to either build it or, you know, nothing happens. So, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, really tough time for the industry. There's enough people around who remember that. And actually, this week, we're getting lots of results, big week for results. I'd say the biggest thing I've read on the gold companies for the last 3 days is, I know, EBITDA in line, EBITDA missed, EBITDA up. Everyone, dividend beat, dividend beat, dividend beat. They are returning cash. Why are they doing that? Because they're like, I don't want to make the same mistake I made last time. I'm going to show shareholders that I'm producing cash and I'm going to return a significant amount to show what I'm doing. That, to me, is the sweet spot. You've got companies whose margins have exploded over the last year. They're making way more money than they expected. They're not rushing out and blowing it. In fact, it's almost too soon for them. They haven't got the projects they haven't. So they have to return some cash. Otherwise, they're just going to sit on it. So we're almost this year, I think, is still going to continue most of this year. We're going to see great returns, great margins, and a lot of that cash being returned to shareholders for us to invest elsewhere. So I think we're in that. Now, I'm old enough. I've been around. I know that won't last. They'll find projects. They'll start building new things. They have to because their reserves are declining. And that will come through. But for the moment, we're getting great profitability and people being very disciplined with capital.
Well, there's always been a bit of a roller coaster sector. It's very cyclical. We will see a downswing in the future. The big question is just when. How do you regard the current fundamentals driving or supporting the gold price, and how sustainable those fundamentals are?
Clearly, always a massive question is what's going on to prices, because that drives everything. And fundamentals in gold, I can look at copper supply, demand, inventories, have long discussions. In gold, they don't really, they're less important, shall we say. That not, obviously, supply is growing 1% a year on average. It's not really accelerating actually at the moment. It might do going forward. Demand has been very strong, clearly, which is why prices are going up, but it's not used. So, when we look at gold fundamentals, we're talking macro drivers, geopolitical risk, economic uncertainty. Well, Trump is in power. That's driven a lot of uncertainty. Gold, has moved a lot since he took over. Liberation Day, tariffs, all of that uncertainty. We then started the year with Venezuela. These things have been definitely part of the driver of gold. Are things going to get more uncertain under Trump? It doesn't look like it currently. So we would say, well, fine, that can continue. There's always something new. It seems to be coming out of there. Economic uncertainty, the US economy is growing quite fast at the moment. Is inflation coming back? It looks like it has to at some point. Fed's going to cut rates potentially. How does that work? Can they maintain this fiscal deficit they have? They might be able to, certainly for a bit longer, but it doesn't feel like it's a sustainable basis on that economy at the moment. People worried about the dollar. So all of those things are sort of feeding in. And in fact, you look at the last 3 years, rates were rising in the States, 23, 24. They were tightening on the monetary policy, et cetera. And gold would normally suffer, and gold went up. So now, people say, well, what's going to happen to the Fed? And I said, well, the Fed are likely to cut. That's a tailwind for gold. So some of these headwinds have become tailwinds. They're supports for the gold price. And then the other big driver recently has been central bank buying. That doubled after Russia invaded Ukraine and US sanctioned dollars. That's continued. It wasn't, volumes are slightly lower last year, but still the fourth highest value, massive. We see more banks wanting to buy. The World Gold Council does surveys of central banks. They see more wanting to buy, more continuing to buy. So that appears to be continuing. That's another support, certainly, for gold. And we've also seen ETF flows increase over the last 6 months to a year as institutions have moved in. And people go, well, we're over 100 million ounces or roughly in ETFs. That's, times that by 5,000, we're sort of 500 billion of gold. Owned in these things, and I go, well, look at the market cap of Nvidia. I mean, this isn't like enormous amounts if you look at it on a global basis. So, can this continue? It certainly looks like. And I would say that the thing I'm always worried about is everything looks positive for gold, so that's when you worry. And people say, what's the bear case for gold? What's going to drive gold down? And the bear case is U.S. economy does well this year. Inflation doesn't come through. Fed actually sort of doesn't have to cut rates because things are going well. They might even talk about raising rates if things are going very well. Actually, huge investment in the States because of tariffs, and therefore the dollar strengthens rather than weakens, which we think it will do. I'm just putting the case. And then gold doesn't actually start to sink back, and people go, why am I holding this? That's possible. How likely? I still find hard. And even if it is for a while, I don't think that's a sustainable basis. I think we will see inflation if the States is growing. We're going to see issues elsewhere. And I think, China, the deglobalization, the competition with the States, China will be wanting to not buy dollars and buy gold and other things. So every sort of month, every week, I'm looking like, is the case intact? Do we still believe in that case? Do I still think gold prices can stay up here? And so far, the conclusion is always that, as I say, my biggest worry is finding people to argue against that.
George, thank you so much for sharing your insights. I think it's a very, very complicated topic. It's a difficult sector to navigate, and it seems like you've given us some insights into how you approach it. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Ron.
That was George Chevely. He's from 91.
Show me the money. That was the Money Web, Be a Better Investor podcast with Rake Finikap. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the MoneyWeb podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.